Greetings, dear patrons. My name is Gail Miller.
Hey, everybody. I'm Pastor Rachel.
And welcome back to Mystify Galds.
It's an extra L.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, why let's not? Just add it in there.
Yeah.
God's saltiest women.
Love it.
And today, we are going to be... I'm so sorry. talking about Marie Dentier. I think I pronounced her name right. She's French. I do all the ethnic ones. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, it's great. I mean...
Oh.
Let's keep going. We'll cut that part out. I was going to interrupt. I don't need to interrupt. We'll cut it out.
She is someone that Pastor Rachel prescribed. I make it sound like she's a drug. take to Marie every day. No, she is someone... Pastor Rachel recommended to me to look into. And she is a highly complex character. She's not one that we can just fully, like, hurrah, hurrah, kind of woman. You kind of have to, like, appreciate her, but also understand that, like, she had her faults.
Yeah.
So, this one isn't going to be so much, like, we love this woman, yay, kind of thing. We're gonna have to, like, really dig through, like, what she's done. But this is an educational podcast. Not everything is going to be la-ti-da. So, are you ready to hear about Miss Marie?
Let's hear it. Let's go for it.
Okay. So... Marie was born sometime around the late 1400s, early 1500s, and she was born in a place called Tournai, or it's now known as modern-day Belgium.
Okay.
And she was born into, my sources were very weird, some would say, like, she was born into a very noble family, and some would just be like, yeah, she was middle class. So, like,
TBD.
Yeah. To be determined. Okay. And that's pretty much all we know about her early life and adolescence. We have no idea other than the fact that she, at some point, joined, a nunnery?
Yeah,
A convent?
Yeah.
We have no idea what she was doing as a teenager and as a child. Okay. So we're just gonna go with that. We don't know exactly when she joined a nunnery. It could have been anywhere in between 1500 and 1523.
Okay.
Most people have settled on her joining the Augustine nunnery of St. Nicholas de Prez in 1508.
Okay.
So we're going to go with that. And she lived, if she did join the nunnery in 1508, she became abbess, and she lived pretty comfortably as abbess of this this convent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she read some of the infamous Martin Luther's works and was like, actually, I hate this. And she was like, hey guys, maybe Protestantism is, like, actually kind of cool after all. Obviously, her convent.
I know.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Her covenant was not huge fans of that.
Yep.
So, in 1524, she was just like, you know what? I like Protestantism.
Oh my gosh, I should be able to pronounce that. It's been a long day. Protestantism. Oh my gosh.
Oh my god.
Okay, please
Lutherism.
Don't fire me. Yeah.
Lutherism.
Luther's view on the Gospels. We'll go with that. Gosh. Goodness. I'm going to lose my job. Just kidding.
I hope not. Jesus Christ. But she was like, you know what, guys, this might actually suck after all, and she dipped from her nunnery.
Okay.
And she ran away to Strasbourg, I think that's how you pronounce it, which was a very popular haven for the Reformans, as most of the sites would call them, the researched. And there in Strasbourg, she met a lot of like her Lutheran counterparts that she very much so idolized, mm-hmm. typically men. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be one of the things that I want to discuss later. Mm-hmm. So like John Calvin, William Farrell, Antoine Fromont, and Simon Robert, who she married about 4 years later.
Okay.
And she also met this woman named Katharina
von Bora?
No.
Got it? No. Okay.
No. No. Oh, interesting. New okay, person. Sorry.
I shouldn't interrupt. Please continue.
No, it's okay. You know more about her than I do.
Okay, but I should... Can I interrupt one real
yes,
quick?
Yes, yes.
The reason I handed her to you is because she is... I've seen her name a lot in Reformation texts.
Okay.
But I know nothing about her.
Oh.
And it always bugged me. And so when we started this podcast, I was like...
I need to do this woman. Yeah.
I need to learn more about her because... So Katharina von Bora is who married Luther. She becomes Katie Luther.
Oh,
so she's Mrs.
Okay.
Luther. And that's why I interrupted and thought that it might have been her. But please continue. Mm-hmm. Not
no,
her.
This is not Luther or a Luther.
Okay.
This is Katharina Zell. I think I pronounced
okay.
her name right. And Katharina Zell believed in clerical marriage, and she wrote a bunch about it. She was a writer's wife.
Okay.
And she is notably who inspired Marie to start writing because
oh.
Marie we're just gonna go with Marie. I'm sorry,
Marie.
I
yep.
am doing her so much injustice, but I don't want to say her last name. She's who inspired Marie to start writing.
Okay. Okay.
So Simon Robert, which is her, which was her husband for about 4 to 5 years, was a priest and a member of the Circle of Mo, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Sure.
M-E-A-U-X, so we're going to go with Mo.
Yeah.
And the couple worked in preaching outside of Strasbourg as, like, street preachers.
Okay.
Specifically in... When I first saw this, I... What?
I'm
oh,
just
why
saying,
are you
I feel
laughing?
So bad that I'm giving you all these hard names to pronounce.
No.
Okay.
This one made me laugh. It's
okay.
I think it's very easy to pronounce. I
okay.
just like when I stumbled across it on her page, I was like, "Oh my god, you can't be serious." Eigel, Switzerland. That's a real place, by the way, and
yep.
it still exists.
Sure does. Yep.
Under the guise of the, like, male idols I had
mm-hmm.
just listed,
mm-hmm.
Specifically with Fromont.
Okay.
And Simon and Marie had 5 kids together before his tragic death in 1533.
Okay.
I say tragic, but I don't actually know what he died from.
Okay.
It could have been anywhere from, like, he got trampled by a horse to he just got, like, pneumonia or
right.
something. Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Clearly he died younger than expected.
Right, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So Farrell moved to Geneva
mm-hmm.
in 1532 to strengthen the Reformation there.
Mm-hmm.
And after Marie's first husband's death, she followed suit, taking her kids with her to Geneva. So in 1533, I believe, she moves to Geneva.
Okay.
Fromont was a pretty popular priest and a member of the church, and he was kind of like in the limelight, but it was
mm-hmm.
only for like 2 minutes, because he soon lost his limelight to Calvin.
Sure. Yeah.
And Calvin had some really like interesting ideas for the Reformation.
I can't believe you got into like I did not expect her to follow Calvinism. So I'm so impressed that in your research for this episode, you, like, not only got into the Reformation, but you
mm-hmm.
started into some of John Calvin's thoughts, which are,
yeah.
like, which are dense even for seasoned theologians.
Yeah.
So, props. Major props.
He had, like, some pretty whack ideas on how he wanted the Reformation to go,
mm-hmm.
and that he brought to the forefront of the movement, but the biggest one that, the one Marie took and just absolutely ran with was that nuns and women who worked in nunneries,
mm-hmm.
right, they were brainwashed and they were like blind followers and needed to be released from their religious prison and join the Lutherans, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I know. Like, absolutely wild. Yeah. Especially because, like, the last three episodes that we've done, all of these women have worked in nunneries at some point and really enjoyed their experience, whether it be because they didn't want to get married and didn't want to die from childbirth, or they just wanted to expand their knowledge, maybe a combination of both, or they just wanted to be surrounded by fellow women.
Right.
Like, living in a nunnery at this time was a genuinely good option.
Yeah.
So it's crazy that Marie, out of all people, was like, yeah, I hate the nuns.
Yep. Problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, like, it's just wild to me. But that is, you know, what she believed. Yeah. So, oftentimes, Lutheran women would come into nunneries and convents and, like, try and, like, preach or teach Catholic women out of their convents.
Okay.
And the abbesses, or, like, the very, like, you know, hardcore believers in Catholicism, would oftentimes be, like, locked in different rooms because they were just, like, you know, they didn't want the bad Catholics with them or whatever.
Yeah.
And so eventually male preachers started to do this as well, where they would like come into nunneries and try and preach. And I think the last time this was ever done was with Calvin.
Okay.
And he had like absolutely no success, obviously. And he locked, as many preachers did, he locked the abbess named Jeanne de Jus in another room to leave her like pounding on the door and screaming to try and like drown him out or whatever. And so he was like, this isn't working, and sent Marie in. And I'm quoting her directly here. She made some pretty interesting comments. So, quote, "Alas, poor creatures, if only you knew how good it was to be next to a handsome husband and how God considers it pleasing. For a long time, I lived in those shadows and hypocrisy where you are, but God alone made me realize the abuse of my pitiful life, and I was brought to the light of truth, considering with the regret how I lived, for in these orders there is nothing but sanctimoniousness, mental corruption, and idleness. I took about 500 ducats from the treasury of the abbey, and I left that unhappiness. Thanks to God, I have five handsome children, and I live wholesomely." She said that to nuns. Yeah. Which is why I'm like, what, this isn't a woman we can necessarily like, hurrah, yay!
Yeah, because like, we would rather celebrate each woman's choice to possibly. Exactly. We would rather celebrate choice than.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say next, is, like, Jeanne de Jus detested Marie for those things, and she believed that every woman should be a nun, and then Marie believed that no one should be a nun.
Yeah.
So it's, like, these two extremes struggling to just be willing to let each other choose.
Right, right.
Which is really sucky that it was like that back then, but that's history for you.
Yep. Yep.
So, anyway, sorry, I'm looking through my script.
No, you're good.
So anyway, Marie was like, I don't get why Jeanne, like, detests me so much. I'm obviously right, or whatever.
Yep.
And she wrote her most popular work titled The War and Deliverance of Geneva, Faithfully Prepared by a Merchant in the City.
Okay.
And that last part, the merchant in the city, was to disguise herself as a man, so if it got out publicly, which it did, she'd be in the clear. And she, of course, said all of her, like, snarky things about nuns and covenants and stuff, but she also like advocated for women preachers, like priestesses, mm-hmm. and allowing clerical marriage, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, we can't fault her for that. Thank you. Thanks for bringing that to light.
Right.
And she just went on and on and on about that in her letter to Jean.
Okay.
And it did get out publicly, and it was pretty popular for like a solid couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And then it disappeared from, like, public view.
Interesting.
And most scholars believe it was because somehow, some way, they had found out it was written by a woman, and then suddenly they changed their minds, even though they were so on board with it, like, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Yawn. Yeah. But she didn't care, which, like, kind of good for her, but also, so she kept street preaching and advocating for priestesses and clerical marriage and all that stuff. And this is around the time, like, we're going to say 1537.
Mm-hmm.
Her male counterparts and her male idols, like, go cold on her. Like, randomly just start really disliking her.
Okay.
Most likely because of her outspokenness and stuff, even though she's preaching the same stuff they believe in.
Right.
So, in 1537, Calvin mocked Froment, whining that Marie has ruined you.
Oh boy.
Oh my gosh, I totally forgot to say this. Before she moves to Geneva, she marries Antony Froment.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
No, all good.
I'm completely sorry.
This makes more sense, though, because then that would be why she moved to Geneva. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And that's why Calvin is mocking Froment to be like, your wife has ruined you.
Yeah.
Like, it's because of that woman you married. And so Calvin and Farel continue to lead the Lutheran movement in Geneva up until, like, 38. And then they were kicked out by the Genevan Council for having, like, too much extreme ideas.
Yeah.
Which, in fairness, some of them
were.
And so the Princess of France noticed this. Like, she was a Lutheran herself in this time. And she sent a letter to Marie, which, first of all, imagine having the Princess of France send you mail.
Right?
That would be amazing. That would be the dream.
Super cool.
Yeah. So she sent a letter in 39 and basically just asked, like, where'd those two guys go? Like, what happened to them? Right?
Yeah.
And even though they had gone cold on Marie and were, like, mocking her and mocking her husband or whatever, you know what Marie does in response? Like, you know what she tells the Princess of France?
I do not. What does she say?
She defends them. And she was like, the council made a stupid decision for kicking them out. They were obviously right. They're making really good choices. They're making really good ideas.
Interesting.
So she's, like, wholeheartedly defending these two guys who don't like her.
Yeah.
And it's admirable in one sense, but at the same time, I can't help but feel like she's being a little bit of a pick-me. Like, she thinks, you know, if I defend these two guys who don't like me, they'll change their minds and they'll learn to like me again.
Yeah.
Which, like, you shouldn't go after male validation like that. Exactly. Just be your own woman, right?
Exactly.
You should be confident with yourself.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
She wrote a letter titled A Very Useful Epistle, and she basically was just like, yeah, the Genevan government, the Genevan Council or whatever, were very stupid for doing that. And she continued to advocate for female priestesses and clerical marriage, all that good stuff. Like, you know, her typical stuff.
Yeah.
And her letter was circulated publicly by a guy named Jean Girard. And he published about 1,500 copies of the letter as, like, little booklets. Oh. And he, like, you know, sold them to the town of Geneva.
Yeah.
And the Genevan Council immediately got him in trouble. Jean was arrested. And then Froment was publicly humiliated and then fired as a priest, I believe, because of what Marie was writing.
Okay.
And it was too provocative. But some of the sources that I read were also like, yeah, they got mad at him because his wife was a better writer than him. And they were like, we can't have a woman being better than you.
Yep.
Which makes me, like, poor Fromont, but also that's kind of funny.
Right, right.
And then they made a law banning women from ever publishing work in the city of Geneva.
Okay.
Yeah. And so obviously the council wasn't super thrilled about this, especially mm-hmm. because Marie, like, for being a woman and it mm-hmm. being for the 1500s, used some very vulgar language in her letter. Mm-hmm. And so, despite that, though, Calvin was actually welcomed back to Geneva in 1541 mm-hmm. on the agreement that he would only stay for 6 months, but he stayed there until he died because he's a man. Of course, he gets that privilege or whatever. And you'd think after finding the very useful epistle, like the letter where she is, like, absolute full-throatedly defending Farrell and Calvin and all of that stuff, you'd think that they would have a change of heart and be like, you know what, this woman is pretty outspoken, but we can use her to our advantage.
Right.
Like, even in that twisted sense, you'd think that they would welcome her back into the Reformation. But no, they continue to be snarky to her. They continue to chastise her.
Yeah.
Immediately as Calvin gets back, he writes to Farrell, and he was like, where is it? I treated that woman how I should have.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she, like, I don't know how, but she completely ignored it and continued to street preach and continued to advocate, which is, like, such a girl boss move. Like, ignoring all the criticism from your male idols.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, in 1555, 11 years before she died, mm-hmm. Calvin reached out to Marie and asked her to write, like, a preface to a sermon he was preaching called mm-hmm. The Adorning of Women. And some people believe that this was him trying to make up to Marie, like, to be friends again. But honestly, I think it was Calvin, like, being petty and mm-hmm. being snarky towards her mm-hmm. because the sermon he preached on, like, the quote that he pulled, the passage, that's what I'm thinking of, the passage he drew from Timothy 2:12 was all about how women shouldn't be, like, teaching men, how mm-hmm. women are lesser than man and should stay in their place, mm-hmm. But she did it anyway, mm-hmm. Obviously continuing to advocate.
Yeah.
And it's believed that a couple years before she died, Fromont divorced her because of the public humiliation.
Okay.
Nothing else is known about Marie other than she passed away in 1561. So that was the life of Marie Dantier. She lived a very interesting life.
A complicated woman, to say the least.
Very messy.
Yeah.
I'll go first on, like, what I appreciate about her, because there's a lot not to appreciate there, mm-hmm. like her obvious chastisation. Mm-hmm. That's not a word, but we're going to pretend.
Chastising.
Chastising of, like, Catholic women and nuns, mm-hmm. And her very, like, pick-me behavior when it came to mm-hmm. Calvin and Farrell. But at the end of the day, her whole purpose, her whole, like, belief system and the reason she did everything that she did in her life mm-hmm. was for the advancement of women in the church.
Yeah.
She never came into this, like, I want to put women down. I want to, like, get rid of the Catholic women. I want to destroy this group of women. I want to erase them or whatever it may be. It was always with the sense of, like, I want to uplift them. I want to uphold them. I want to bring them into new life or whatever.
Yeah.
That was always her goal. Mm-hmm. And even though she made some very questionable choices out of it, I can't help but respect her, like, dedication to her beliefs and her want to just, you know, lead women to a better life, even if the better life wasn't fit for everyone.
Right.
So that's what I appreciate about Marie.
I would say something similar. You know, it's funny. A lot of the reformands a lot of the actors at the time of the Reformation were really, I think, healthily, we've been pointing out over, you know, the last while. I haven't been doing this. Theologians and historians have been pointing out a lot of the flaws of a lot of these people, saying, like, they're not saints. They're not perfect. So, like, Luther was a deeply flawed human.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that so that we can understand and remember that, like, these people aren't perfect by any means. They're complicated. They're humans. Mm-hmm. So
especially by today's standards.
Exactly. Especially by today's standards. And so I appreciate, while I, again, don't agree with her methods and don't agree with a lot of her beliefs, I do appreciate that she was willing to risk what she did for the advancement of women in society and in the church, to be able to say, this matters and this is why it matters.
Yeah.
That's something worth
admiring.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm very glad, at least at later on in her life, she at least from what I saw in my research, she gave up her, like, pickminess, because at the beginning of her life, especially when it came to chastising nuns in the convent or whatever, it definitely felt, like, motivated because she wanted to please her male counterparts and to gain good faith with them. I'm very glad after a while she was just like, I'm just gonna keep doing what I'm doing. Like, even if you don't like me, it doesn't really matter in the end, because what I'm doing is important, even if it's not important to you.
Right. This is my path, even if you can't see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is also admirable to be able to say, this matters, even if that means I'm risking this relationship or risking your approval. Yeah. For sure. Oh my gosh, well, that was a different flavor than our last ones have been.
Sorry, it was such a downer.
No, that's okay, that's okay. I am grateful to you for bringing information about her, because like I said, I didn't know enough about her, so now I know more about who she is.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Very complicated woman.
Very complicated.
We love that about her.
That's right. Well, like we've said, feel free to do your own research and to make up your own opinions, obviously. But thanks for joining us on this journey. This has also been a roller coaster of an episode. So thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. And I guess in the meantime, embrace your humanity and embrace your messiness, because we've all got it.
And don't listen to your counterparts, even if it's very, very tempting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Stay salty, everybody. Talk to you later.
Bye.